We wanted to be aggressive. You know, the first time we played them, we were very passive. And as the game went on, they just got deeper and deeper in the lane. So we said we're going to fight them. And God, they just went by us. They got too many easy layups. We didn't make them earn it. They beat us in transition a couple times. But thank goodness we shot the ball well. We passed the ball well. We hung in there. Mike made a big three again before halftime. Kept it close. We got the stops. Kept it at four. We said, hey, we're fine. You're on the road. You're only down four against a really, really good team. And then, you know, we chipped away, right, and pretty much dominated the second half. Once we took the lead, we never gave it back up.
Kansas State continues to get it done on the road. They win last night in Austin over the Texas Longhorns, 71-64. The nine-game conference winning streak is the longest by a K-State team in the Big 12 era and continues the longest regular season conference winning streak in 45 seasons since the Wildcats won 11 consecutive games back in 1974 in the old Big 8 Conference. K-State was down 39-31 shortly before halftime, but then put together a run over the last part of the first half, early part of the second half, a 23-8 run, kind of take control of the game. K-State shot 55% from the floor. Barry Brown dealt with some early foul trouble, but he had 16 points, as did Xavier Sneed. Dean Wade with 12, Kamau Stokes 11, and a big three-pointer late in the game, and McCall Maween with 11 points. It was a balanced attack for K-State, and they did it without Cartier Jada, who's out indefinitely. He may or may not be back this year. It's surgery. According to reports, it's a finger injury. According to the broadcast last night, right finger, and he's a left-handed player. So we don't exactly fully, I don't know if we can truly believe what we've been hearing so far. K-State's been kind of coy as to how the injury occurred. They haven't even explained it. Doesn't sound like it's a basketball injury, so you wonder if Cartier Jada did something maybe somewhat silly that broke his finger, maybe a freak accident. Who knows? Bottom line is he was not available last night. He probably won't be available for a little while. That hurts K-State. They don't have a lot of depth, but last night they overcame it, and their starting five got it done. Big road win for Kansas State. And had they lost last night, KU then would have been just a half game behind them in the standings, so they're still a game and a half up, two up in the loss column. And now K-State, a big game at home, probably without Jada again, against Iowa State. And that tip time this Saturday in Manhattan at Bramlage Coliseum at 3 o'clock. You can watch it on ESPN2. Iowa State probably feeling like they are in a must-win situation to have any chance of winning the Big 12. If K-State beats Iowa State at home Saturday, I think K-State virtually eliminates Iowa State from the Big 12 championship race. But if Iowa State would beat K-State on Saturday, KU beats West Virginia at home, which they should. West Virginia kicked off a couple players off their team, one of their better players, and they've been struggling even with those guys. You could very well see a very tight race when you look at the standings after Saturday's games. So it's a huge game for K-State. It's a huge game for Iowa State. They have no room for error to lose another game in the Big 12. K-State has a little bit of room for error. And then there's KU nipping on their heels. KU's got an easy game, it looks like, on paper against West Virginia Saturday. And then KU has a week off. KU's going to have one game in 10 days. And that's something KU could really use because Marcus Garrett trying to get his ankle healthy. KU's a little banged up here and there. Guys playing a lot of minutes. Devon Dotson played all 45 in the overtime win over TCU. So it could be a very key moment in the Big 12 race. K-State needs to keep it going. They've won 9 in a row. At some point, every streak must come to an end. Will it be this Saturday at home against Iowa State? We shall see. But K-State, wow, two big road wins at Baylor, at Texas, 5-1 on the road in the Big 12. That is just phenomenal. And it would give you hope if you're a K-State fan. You should not absolutely rule out K-State winning in Lawrence. I know a lot of K-State fans are like, oh, that's blasphemy. Listen, K-State plays well on the road or finds ways to win on the road. Their defense travels. Last night they had to play some zone because they're in foul trouble. Still found a way to win against Texas, in Texas, a place Kansas couldn't win earlier this year. So big win for K-State last night. And you look at the Big 12 race coming up tonight. There's another game, Texas Tech at Oklahoma State. That's a big game for Texas Tech. They can't afford to stumble. Right now, K-State 9-2 in the Big 12 rankings, KU 8-4. Texas Tech, Iowa State, Baylor all 7-4. So a big game for Texas Tech tonight. Huge win last night for K-State. And then Saturday, you've got Texas Tech hosting Baylor. That's a huge game. Iowa State at K-State, as we mentioned, and then West Virginia at KU. Pregame at 2:30, tip at 3 on Z96.3 Lake coming up on Saturday. So huge win for K-State. More college basketball to come in a moment. But first, we wrap up high school basketball from last night, where the Trojan boys got it done in Salina, and I don't think anybody saw a 22-point win coming. Beloit winning, the third-ranked team in the state in 3A, now 17-1 on the year. They win at Salina Sacred Heart 62-40. They're up 40-33 going into the fourth quarter, outscored Sacred Heart 22-7 in the fourth, and didn't have anybody go nuts. They're just a balanced offensive team. Hudson Smith 11, Carson Cox 10, Charlie Skidmore at 21. Beloit is your league champion to clinch outright league title. They can have a perfect league season with a win at Minneapolis on Friday. Beloit will be the number one seed in their sub-state coming up later this month, as they'll be at the Riley County sub-state, but they'll be a number one seed and be hosting a first-round game. And a big win for Beloit last night, that in Sacred Heart stretch of four straight league championships. So a champion dethroned. Other boys game last night, Ellsworth over Southeast Saline 55-34. Minneapolis all over Republic County 57-22. Lakeside wins at Wilson 63-56. Thunder Ridge wins at Lincoln 48-32. And Osborne a win at Sylvan Lucas 56-38. St. John's Tipton wins at Pike Valley 68-44. More on that with Dusty in a little bit. Smith Center cruises past Russell 79-57. And a score that will interest people that follow Concordia, obviously, but also Beloit. Concordia last night lost to number four, Phillipsburg. Phillipsburg ranked fourth in 3A. Mm-hmm. Phillipsburg's losses is to the number one Central Plains in 1A, and their other loss is to number three Beloit in 3A. Phillipsburg last night at Concordia, Phillipsburg won by just two. Mm-hmm. Now, why is that a big deal? Right now, the sub-state standings, Concordia is a seven seed in the same sub-state as Beloit. There is still a chance, I believe, that Concordia could be the 8 seed. Guess who Concordia would play the first round of sub-state?
Beloit.
That is not your normal 8 seed. It's not your normal 7 seed.
I wouldn't at all want that for my first round
game. Trust me, I don't think Beloit does either.
No.
I think they'd rather play Clay Center and Concordia.
Yeah.
Although both are 4A schools. I guess not 4A anymore, but it's you know what,
they
what
would
I'm
be
saying. They're bigger 3As. So that's... that's an interesting situation there, because Phillipsburg's very good. And I think Phillipsburg will win the Hoisington sub-state, and I think they'll be at Hutch. And I think Beloit certainly got a great chance to be at Hutch as well. And I'd love to see a rematch, Phillipsburg and Beloit. But Phillipsburg last night, and granted, it was at Concordia, sub-state first-round game you'd have at home. But still, that's an eye-opener. Concordia almost knocking off Phillipsburg. So you look at that boys sub-state, and I think a lot of people just go, well, you know, Beloit's going to cruise because they got four less losses than the number two seed right now. Yeah, but it's pretty decent quality through the rest of that sub-state if Concordia is a 7 or 8 seed, man.
Don't get caught in the trap, man.
No, you can't. You know, I think the interesting thing for the Beloit boys is, are they going to be ready to go Friday night at Minneapolis? You wrapped up a league title.
Yeah.
You wrapped up a number one seed. I mean, is it important to go undefeated in league play? I think it is. You got to have a perfect record.
I think for kids, they've got to be up for that. You know, the coaches might not focus on it as much. They just want to go out and win this one game.
Mm-hmm.
But for the kids, if that was me and I was playing and I had a chance to be undefeated in the league, I'd come out focused and ready to just roll in that one and then move on.
Beloit's had some problems at Minneapolis over the years, even when Minnie hasn't been great. And that's an interesting game we'll have on Friday on Z96.3 The Lake. And the other thing is, Minnie is in Beloit sub-state, too.
Yeah.
So something to keep an eye on. So the boys' finals, let me go to you for St. John's Tipton Pike Valley, then we'll jump to the girls.
Yeah, the Blue Jay boys didn't play the greatest in the first half. Lance Bergman was not pleased. It was 13-12 after one and 31-27 at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
So they pulled away and ended up winning a 23-3 third quarter is what did Pike Valley in. So Blue Jays won at 68-44. Brady Pullins is playing great right now, had another big game with 24.
How many dunks?
He didn't have any dunks last night.
What a slacker.
I was on the stage on the baseline last night where I was set up, and I was like, I sent a snap to Kale and to Byron, Brady's dad. I was like, I want Brady to stuff it right in my face right here, and it didn't happen.
What a letdown.
24 points, though. He's playing great. Yeah, he's averaging like 22 a game the last six games. So
yeah.
24 for him, 19 for Brandon Bates, 14 in the third quarter. So, and then Dalton Schmidt had his first ever double-figure game with 10 last night as well for the Blue Jays. So they're 10-1 now in the league. They're all three losses have come to Osborne, as we mentioned. So.
Okay, well, let's roll over then to the girls, the game you did last night, and then we'll go over the rest of the scores on the girls' side.
Girls' contest, St. John's Tipton, they kind of controlled this thing all the way through. They led 16-6 after one, 34-18 at half, and led by as many as 27 in the third quarter. Keith Christine kind of got everybody into the game, and they ended up winning it by 22, 54, 32, 20 for Lauren Dubert, including five threes. And Elle Eilert had her first double-figure game of the season with 10 points. St. John's Tipton girls are now 15-2 and 9-1. It was their eighth straight win over Pike Valley. Jessica Jensen had 11 for Pike Valley. Kenzie Langston, 10 to lead the way for the Lady Panthers in that game last night on the girls' side, 54-32, St. John's Tipton with the victory.
All right, other girls' finals from last night. Beloit girls win at Sacred Heart, 46-44. Sacred Heart without their best player. She's out for the season with a knee injury. She was averaging a double-double, but Sacred Heart played pretty well in her absence, and Beloit escapes with a win. Breezy Schroeder, a game-winning layup with 7.8 seconds remaining. Shay Larson, Jessica Meyer with 10. Hannah Getz with 16 for Sacred Heart. So an important win for Beloit as they're trying to get the number two seed on the girls' side of their three substate at Riley County. An important win. And maybe it's not by, you know, I always say, you win by one or 30. You don't apologize for winning. And, you know, yeah, I think you would say, well, Sacred Heart's missing one of their top players. Beloit should maybe cruise. Although you just never know. That's other girls or boys get opportunities to play, and then you might not have a lot of film on them, and you don't know how to maybe defend them because first time you've seen them. And Beloit comes up with a win. When you win at Sacred Heart, you don't apologize.
No.
Beloit girls win last night on the layup by Schroeder. Ellsworth girls beat Southeast Saline 43-39. That's a bit of an upset. Minneapolis girls win at Republic County 54-48. Beloit will go to Minneapolis on Friday. Beloit girls still have an outside chance to get a share of the league title for the fifth straight year. They need Russell to lose their last two league games at home, and Beloit have to win at Minneapolis. It's highly doubtful that Russell's going to lose both games at home in league play, but there's still that chance. Lakeside girls win at Wilson. Larocque with 14, Bergman 11, 50-31 was that final. Thunder Ridge cruises past Lincoln 56-13, led 35-7.5. Bowden 16, Kirkhoff with 13, Walter 10 for Lincoln. Sylvan Lucas girls win over Osborne 57-44. And Dusty told you St. John's Tipton girls over Pike Valley 54-32. Phillipsburg girls win at Concordia 55-46. And Russell girls with a nice win at Smith Center 49-45. All those scores are available to you if you missed them or if we went too quick. Go to nckssports.com. Latest KBCA basketball rankings also there, plus our upcoming broadcast schedule coming up on Friday. St. John's Tipton at Sylvan Lucas on KD Country 94. Beloit at Minneapolis on Z96.3 The Lake. We'll have regional wrestling reports Friday and Saturday throughout the days covering the 3-2-1A regional wrestling tournament there in Beloit. All our area teams and wrestlers are competing there to qualify for state. And the latest Kansas Wrestling Coach Association rankings are also posted at nckssports.com. Anything that you want to mention about that?
I have two things I want to note because I had just got this morning and put it on. Darnell Holloway had 34 last night for Osborne against Sylvan Lucas, so a big game for him. I just talked to Coach Walters. He was pleased with the way Darnell played in that win 56-38. So that was one note that I wanted to add to what we were talking about with last night. Also, I just got this. Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge Basketball has been moved to Thursday. They're trying to be proactive this time just in case snow comes in on Friday.
So Rock Hills can finally play a game this week.
And their boys basketball coach is the one that recommended, let's move it to Thursday so we can get this game in.
Yeah, there's some chance for snow on Friday.
Because he's only at 16 games played right now.
Yeah, I don't
looking
blame
for
him.
17. So
wow.
Rock Hills at Thunder Ridge has been moved to Thursday. Same times as girls varsity at 6.
Makes sense, man. You're already three short. You can't be four short. You don't want to be four short, even though that won't count towards the regional seedings because the regional bracket will come out today, and we expect that. The Osborne boys will be a one seed. St. Joseph Tipton boys will be a one seed. St. Joseph Tipton girls will be a one seed.
Yeah, and there's some jumbled spots that I haven't had time to look at here this morning as far as that. But, yeah, all those brackets, hopefully by 10, they'll start rolling in here, and we'll have links posted at nckssports.com. But those are the three teams that we know for sure will be one seeds and won't have to play the first-round games next week. Thunder Ridge girls as well would be a one seed. So there's four that we know for sure that won't have a game on that first night, so they'll have a little bit of time to relax and get ready for the rest of the regional tournament.
Hill City Regional and the other regional.
Solomon.
Is Solomon. Yep. Wrestling. Oh, yep. Go ahead.
Sylvan would be hosting their own regional, too,
that's
as far as that's concerned.
Colton Shoemaker ranked second in 113 pounds in the latest KWCA rankings on wrestling side of things. Jane Atwood of Smith Center, number one at 138. Zane Colson of Rock Hills and wrestles with Beloit, number one at 152. And see if there's anybody else here.
Chance at 145 for Lincoln is
Chance
sixth. Chance Bath
is sixth at 145. And
that's everybody in our.
I'm going to see if there's anybody else. Looks like that's it. Yeah. All that's available at nckfsports.com. So yesterday we were talking about Shawnna Porter, who is now Rima, scored 63 in a game, had a record for a short period of time for most points in the game by a girls basketball player in the state of Kansas. And then Jackie Stiles broke it shortly after that, which Shawnna was expecting and even said that to the local media back then in 1996. I say back then, that was 22 years ago. Once again, my apologies to Shawnna if she's listening, because that makes you feel older.
It still feels like it was 10 years ago.
I know, it does, doesn't it? It does. Okay, so I saw some more interesting stuff, and that is the Salina Journal had their all-area girls teams from, I don't know what year this is technically, but J.C. Hoyt, who is now the head coach at UMKC, who was assistant at K-State, who played at Wichita State, originally was going to play at Oklahoma State on his full ride scholarship. She scored over 2,000 points. She was a first teamer that year. But the reason I bring this up is, you know, Ashley Sweta McPherson, who had a great career there at Kansas State. But it has a list of the all-time leading scorers, because I was telling you this yesterday. I said that Shawnna Porter was fifth, I thought. And, yes, she is. But the rest of the list is also interesting because we got some more local flavor. And the reason this is coming up is because Emily Ryans of Central Plains, who's just a junior, she has 1,993 career points. So she's going to have 2,000 here very quickly. And she has still another year and plus some, you know, I would say probably another 8 games to play possibly or whatever it may be to win state. They're the heavy favorite to win in their class. And so right now she's 18th on all-time scoring list and she still has a ways to go. Now, I don't think she's going to catch Jackie Stiles. That would be about impossible.
No.
But she could possibly, maybe, there's a chance she can move all the way to number, I would say number 3 on the list. I don't know if she can get the Lori Kane.
Either.
So Jackie Stiles has 3,603 career points state of Kansas, all-time record by almost 500 points. Second is Lori Kane of Mound Ridge, who, of course, had a great career at Kansas State. Susan Wolfe of Andover third. Shaylee Lenning of Sublette, 2,510 points, had a great career at K-State and went on to play in the WNBA. Of course, Jackie Stiles did too. Jackie went to Missouri State and led her team to a Final Four appearance, which is still one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in women's basketball. Shawnna Porter, Wakanda East, now Shawnna Remus, fifth on the list, 2,371. Looks like Emily Ryan's going to knock her out of the top 5 the way that's going, unfortunately. Miklanat Tennell of Centralia, I saw her play, 2,347 points, is sixth. Kendra Wecker, remember her? Pretty good player at K-State, I'd say. Her jersey in the rafters, along with Lori Kane. She had 2,305 points at Marysville. And here's more local flavor for you. Eighth on the all-time list is Brooke Ubelaker of Osborne, 2,293 career points. And then the rest of them here, Tristan Gegg of LeBec County, 8th, Kelly St. Clair of Baxter Springs, 10th, Sarah Clausen of Remington, 11th, J.C. Kramer of Jeff County North, 12th, which she's recent, Catherine Flott of Opie, 13th, Michelle Stevie, Opie, 14th, J.C. Hoyt of Hoxie, and like I said, she's UMKC head coach now, tied for 15th with Rachel Ruler of Colby, Brenda Phillips of Golden Plains, 17th, and then there you have it, Emily Ryan, 18th on the list and moving up. So it's an interesting list. You've got Wakanda East represented. You have Osborne represented from our area. Two of the top 8.
Yeah, I think Emily Ryan, if she plays enough games, would probably be up to 12th by the end of the
year. 12th by the end of this year?
Yeah, just kind of looking at those numbers.
What is she averaging per game right this year? Do you know?
I don't know. It's like 23, I think, or something.
Yeah,
she
doesn't play fourth quarter a lot of games.
She doesn't play it, yeah.
So next year, you're going to play what? You'd play about 25 games. So
25. And
so she's going to get at least 600 points next year if she's healthy. 600, and you said she'd be on 12th.
Yeah.
She'd be 20, 64, 600. That would put her fourth all time.
Yeah.
And she'd have a chance to catch Susan Wolf for third. But she's not going to get the Lori Kane, I don't think.
Lori and Jackie might be out of reach just the way Central Plains plays.
Unless the coaches are going to leave her in and stack her stats.
Yeah. I mean, there was close games that they were playing in, and she was playing four quarters. I think she might be able to catch Jackie.
Yeah,
because Claflin was a different story back then. I mean, she had to play in those games.
Yeah, she did.
Because there were close games.
There were some really good games.
Especially out at state, you know, they didn't have the games they were just going to roll through everybody and win a state championship.
It was Jackie and
like
nobody
that.
Else.
Exactly.
I mean, she.
And that's not the case with this Central Plains team. I mean, Emily's really good. But they've got other athletes and other players that are pretty good.
I've said this a few times. Jackie Stiles never won a state championship as a high school basketball player, but her sister Roxanne did, and she averaged 12 points a game because she had a better team around her. That's just the way it was. So, and Jackie was unbelievable talent, obviously. All right, so we're going back in the time machine when it comes to that. All right, college basketball last night, an amazing comeback an amazing comeback by Duke. And I will say this, I'm not shocked by it. Duke's come back before. They had an amazing comeback against Maryland in the Final Four back in the early 2000s. And Duke was down 23, and they came back and won last night over Louisville, 71-69. And not a lot of people are really big fans of Duke, so I think a lot of people didn't enjoy that comeback. But you have to appreciate it if you like college basketball. And then the other game last night that was very interesting, LSU ranked 19th, went to number 5 Kentucky at Rupp Arena. And LSU, game was tied 71. They bring the ball up the floor. Guy misses a layup, and then there's a follow that goes in. But it looked like the ball was above the cylinder. It would have been basket interference, and it should have been waved off. Well, the rules, and once again, this is where I have a problem with replay. And I'm not a big, huge fan of John Calipari of Kentucky. But once again, I can be objective enough to listen to what he's saying and forget who the quote's coming from. He makes an excellent point. Used to be that you couldn't go back and review certain things. Now you can review a guy with his foot in the restricted circle, which happened in the Louisville Duke game, which was called a charge. It was overturned because they went to the monitor to see if the guy's foot was inside the restricted circle, restricted area. They overruled it after looking at the replay monitor, and they said that it was a block. And so thus Duke went to the line, hit 2 free throws, and won the game. That was the right call, but they were able to go to their monitor and review it. Why basket interference is not allowed to be reviewed is beyond me. I don't get it either. You can go back, you can look at the clock, you can look back to see if a guy's foot is on the line, whether it's a 2 or a 3. You can look back, you can go back at the monitor and see a put back and see if that's good. You can look at the restricted circles I mentioned. You can look at a hook and a hold now. You can look at an elbow to the head. You can look at flagrant fouls. You can review so many things, but you can't review basketball interference. Here's John Calipari. And he makes a really good point. His team losing on a controversial call, which ironically involves a team from Louisiana, Louisiana State University, LSU. Remember New Orleans Saints robbed with an egregious missed call by the official in the NFC title game? That could have very well, had it been called, the Saints very well could have gone to the Super Bowl. Yeah, people in Louisiana still not very happy about that. And so last night I saw some people complain on social media about the call against Kentucky, and one Louisiana fan said, listen, after what happened to us in the NFC title game, the state of Louisiana deserves this call and every other call for the next 10 years. Okay, I don't know if I go that far. But his Calipari makes a really good point about why it should be reviewed.
We lost in the Final Four when there was a goal, a shot clock violation, and they said it was not reviewable. And then they changed the rule to say, why would you want to lose a game on a shot clock violation and it's easy to go check? Well, this one's easy to go check too. Just go check it. Why would that not be reviewable? So we're like Wilt Chamberlain. We change rules. I don't know.
Listen, you might not like John Calipari, but you have to understand the words. Forget who said it. He makes an unbelievably good point. And this is the problem I have with instant replay. I'm in favor of instant replay. I think you should put a clock on it. And if you can't, within 60 seconds, once they pull the video up for you, if you cannot determine within 60 seconds whether or not it's off a certain person or whether the shot was good or not, you have to go with the call that you made on the floor or on the field. It should not take 5 minutes to look at it. Because if it takes that long to look at it, that probably means it's not conclusive enough. So, and now with technology, you should be able to get 3 or 4 angles within 60 seconds. I would hope you could. Now you can ask somebody to rewind it. I know you want to get the call right. Maybe it's 90 seconds. If you think 60 seconds isn't long enough, that's fine. My problem with replay is it completely slows down the game. It messes up the rhythm and tempo of the game, whether it's football or especially basketball. But listen, if we're going, the whole premise of instant replay is what? To get it right. To get it right. So if the goal is to get it right, then why in the world do we put limitations on what can be reviewed? It's kind of a contradiction, isn't it? Like the NFL, you can't challenge a bad call by the official, which was a completely missed call in the Saints-Rams NFC title game. Sean Payton should have had the right, or the people upstairs inside 2 minutes of the game, they go, challenges go to the booth. That should have been called. They should have said, listen, you missed it. That was a helmet-to-helmet hit plus pass interference. 2 penalties, decide which one the Saints want, and the game continues. Well, that's not reviewable. We can't review that. Well, we can. We as fans can review it. We watch it on TV. We review it all the time. So if we can, why can't they get it right? Isn't the point of instant replay to get it right? They did not get it right in the Saints-Rams game. And in fairness, earlier in that game, a couple of face mask calls that were missed that the Rams could have challenged and would have shown, yes, that's a face mask penalty. Let's throw the flag. What blows me away is you can review a guy in the restricted circle trying to take a charge in a Louisville-Duke game in the final 15 seconds. You can't review basket interference on the final play of the game between Kentucky and LSU. That's just ridiculous, in my opinion. John Calipari is absolutely right. If you can go review this or that, this is a very easy reviewable play. You go back and look at it, it takes you 10 seconds at most to understand that was basket interference. The ball was still in the cylinder when it was tipped or put back in by LSU last night. That game should have gone to overtime. We could go back a little bit further and listen. If Bruce Weber wanted to throw a challenge flag against the KU Jayhawks for Svi Mykhailiuk's travel that ended up tying the game and forcing overtime, if I remember right, did it tie the game or did it win the game? I can't remember. Actually, it might have won. Actually, it won the game. It didn't go to overtime. I think it won the game. You know, that's one that if it's completely obvious, I think you should be able to review it. I do. Now, that one's tough because, although that was, I'm trying to remember if that was the final play where there's no time on the clock or not. I think K-State had a chance for a Hail Mary or something. And you don't want to stop it there because then you allow Kansas to set up their defense. I'd have to go back and watch the end of that game. So that one would be kind of hard to challenge, I get. But the basket interference, that was the final play of the game last night. That's easy to review. John Calipari is 1,000% correct. If you can go back and review all this other stuff, why can't you review that? It was a dead ball. The game was over. Final play of the game. Determine who won. John Calipari is absolutely correct. And that's what really upsets me about instant replay. We want to get it right, but there's limitations to what we can review. Wait a minute. There should be no limitations. If you truly want to get it right, well, that'll slow down the game too much. Well, then we shouldn't have instant replay. I mean, it feels like you're going to a swimming pool and there's a deep end. And you brag about being a great swimmer, but you're scared to jump in. You just put your toes in the water. Yeah, it's kind of deep. But you said you're a great swimmer. Yeah, but maybe I might drown. Yeah, but you said you're a great swimmer. Yeah, but I might. That's a little deep. That's a little too deep. Let me put my feet in the water. You know what? Let me put my all my. Let's just. I'll kind of jump in, but I'll hang on to the side. That's what it feels like with instant replay. We're not jumping in. And did you see what happened last night, LSU Kentucky?
I did.
Okay, LSU. Let me give it. Dusty just joined us again. Yeah. So forgive me, listeners, for rehashing this for a moment. LSU and Kentucky. LSU with a putback after a missed shot at the buzzer in Kentucky at Rupp Arena. And they went to the monitor to see if the shot was off in time, which it was clearly off in time. And so they get a look at the monitor. They can clearly see it's basket interference. The ball's still in the cylinder when the guy puts the ball back up and in for the game winner. It's not reviewable. So even though the refs are reviewing the play,
the time, they're not reviewing the.
They're reviewing to see if the they can't review that, which is stupid.
Yeah.
You're already reviewing to see if the shot is off in time. Yeah. Everything to me, if in a play like that, when it's the final play of the game and you're reviewing, here's what I think: if you're going to review one thing, but you see something else is wrong, you should have the ability to change anything you see that's wrong during that review. You get what I'm saying?
It's like the thing that happened in the finals last year with LeBron where they thought there was like
the restricted circle.
Restricted area.
Which happened last night in the Duke-Louisville game.
And that around and giving wasn't it an offensive foul? It ended up being on LeBron after that because he wasn't even close.
No.
And they should never even reviewed it.
Right.
But they did, and then they reversed a call on something else that wasn't even part of it.
Well, here's the point. Last night, Duke-Louisville, once again, I rehash this, or listeners are like, well, you just said this. I'm going to let Dusty in on this. Because Dusty was doing games on the radio last night. Didn't see it. Duke-Louisville, Duke was down 23, came back, and they won the game. Game was tied 69-69. It's at Louisville. Louisville guy slides in, takes a charge. Looked to be the right call. But guess what? The Louisville guy had his left foot just inside the restricted circle. That is reviewable.
Yeah.
They go review it. They go, oh, his foot's inside the circle, overturn it. They go from charge to block. Duke gets two free throws. They make both. Those are the game-winning free throws with 14 seconds to go. They can review that, but they can't review basket interference on the final play of a game?
It's insane.
It's stupid. if the whole point of instant replay is to get it right. And to me, if you're a coach, and the same thing with NFL, well, we can't challenge missed calls or calls. Why not? Why not? And so I think the NFL is going to change that rule here soon, I would hope, after what happened to the Saints and the Rams game. But it's just silly that you sit here and say, we have instant replay to get it right. Then we spend all this time breaking up the momentum of the game and the rhythm of the game and the tempo of the game. And then we can't review basket interference, which John Calipari just said, the cut I played, he's like, it's very easy to look at. And plus, they're already at the monitor to look at where the shot was off in time. And those refs, you know, are like, oh, God, we missed that one.
Yeah.
But they can't change it because of the rules.
Yeah.
Silly.
You know they want to.
Sure they
do. I mean, I would think they want to.
Sure.
To make it look like they don't look like fools.
Right.
Okay.
But their job is to enforce the rules.
Yeah.
They don't make the rules. They enforce them.
Yeah. That's
The game shouldn't have been decided like that. And I'm not a Kentucky fan. I'm glad Kentucky lost. But it was interesting. It involved a Louisiana team. And somebody put on social media, quit whining about it. People in Louisiana deserve this call and 10 more after what happened in the Saints-Rams game.
It's like saying that the KU fans deserve a call from the Chiefs game or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know.
Just because I'm a Chiefs fan doesn't mean I'm a KU fan.
Right. I understand not everything be reviewable. You know, KU, when the travel was fee, you know, I think K-State had a Hail Mary right after he made that or something. I can't remember. I go back and look at it. But if there still was play was resuming right after he made the bucket, you can't, you know what, Bruce Weber throws a challenge flag. Well, you're not going to stop it right in the middle of everything because that would allow Kansas to set up their defense for a Hail Mary play. That would not be one of those plays that you could review. But let's say it's a final play of the game, and you go to the monitor last night, and you see that the guy traveled in for the game-winning layup. Hey, if it's a travel and you saw it, let's make the call, even though you're reviewing whether the shot was off in time. If you're about getting it right, let's try to get it right. It'll never be perfect. The system will never be perfect. I'm okay with replay, but it's just like we're kind of halfway in. We're not fully in at all. And I don't understand how you can put limitations on what you want to review when you say you want to get it right. And if you argue, well, that's going to take too much time and disrupting the game. It's happening already.
Yeah.
It's already happening. You don't put a clock, a stopwatch, and say 60 seconds to figure this out. Sometimes it takes 5 minutes. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So let's clean this up with instant replay, can we?
Clean it up. Give you more options and clean it up.
I will say this. If not everything's reviewable, what's the point? Let's not even have it. I mean, everything should be reviewable or nothing. I'm an all or nothing guy on that one.
Yeah.
And John Calipari said they changed the rule a few years ago. They lost the game in the Final Four because they couldn't review a shot clock violation. Now they can.
Yeah.
He's like, well, now we're gonna change. Now they could see they'll probably change this rule. We're the Wilt Chamberlain of college basketball. We're helping change the rules.
Yeah.
He's got a point.
Yeah. One of the things I don't like is, like, how can you review a tip at certain points of the game, like a tip ball that goes out of bounds, but you can't do it the whole game?
Right.
Like, every possession should matter,
I agree.
Like, every single possession you can have.
I agree.
For the coaches, I guarantee they're going to say every single one of those times that I have the ball in my hands, it matters.
I agree.
And so there's some of those things that just don't make sense to me.
I agree. But that'll slow the game up too many times, which I do.
It
will.
There's a lot of those that are probably going to be questionable during the game. But
could still
do it at one point of the game. It should be open for the rest of the game.
Hey, you had to review the other night, KU-TCU game. TCU's up two, and Dedrick Dawson tipped the ball, and they originally said it was TCU ball, which was the wrong call. If there was no review, KU probably loses that game.
Yeah.
There was review. They got it right.
And what happens if it's 10 minutes into the second half there?
A team's on a run or something.
Yeah, and you're down by 7, and then the ball gets tipped out of bounds, and they say it goes off of you initially, off of KU, but it actually went off of TCU. Well, KU might have the ball and have a chance to get a 3 to cut the lead to 4.
Instead, TCU gets the ball, they hit a 3.
Yeah, they hit a 3, and they're up 10.
6-point swing, maybe.
Like, this is not,
it's important,
isn't it? It doesn't make sense to me.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. So a lot of controversy last night, college basketball, but Duke, what they did to Louisville, it's funny, I flipped over and Seth Greenberg goes, Louisville's just pasting Duke. They're just controlling everything. And they were up 20 at the time. And I was like, yeah, a lot of time left. Next thing I know, Duke's within 5. I'm like, K-State game was over. I flipped over. I'm like, Duke's going to win. And Louisville had no timeouts in the final 5 minutes. They led by 20 in the second half. How did Chris Mackey use all his timeouts? He couldn't calm down his kids at all. I had no timeouts.
Yeah.
That probably wasn't good coaching. Not good use of timeouts. I can understand Duke being out of timeouts. They were down 20.
Yeah, exactly.
Duke had 2 left.
Yeah.
And Mike Krzyzewski's birthday today. What a nice gift that was for the guy that has everything, including Zion Williamson, who will be the number one pick in the draft next year. And the Knicks are sitting there going, yeah, we hope we win that lottery thing because they're the worst team in the NBA. Wouldn't that be something? Zion going to the Knicks? He's going to make – Fran Franchella said it. Zion Williamson's going to make $1 billion. He's right. especially if he goes to New York. He'll make $1 billion as long as he stays healthy. He's right about that. Then imagine if the Knicks would get a KD. There's been rumors KD might go to New York. KD can't handle the media in the Bay Area. How's he going to handle New York media?
I don't see that happening.
I think that's a pipe dream, to be honest. All right, other news. Let's stick with the NBA for a moment. And then we'll get to the Chiefs if they make some changes on their defensive coaching staff. Plus, we'll hear from Cliff Kingsbury as Kyler Murray has been rumored to maybe be the number one overall pick in the NFL draft and go play under former Texas Tech head coach and now Arizona Cardinal head coach Cliff Kingsbury. So we'll cover that in a moment. This was awesome yesterday. The NBA is about offense now. And if you saw the NBA explanation of a travel by Bradley Beal of the Wizards the other night, you've lost your mind and you don't know what a travel is anymore. Did you see that explanation? Bradley Beal took like three steps as he was going up for a layup. He started to fumble the ball, came back down with it, made a pass, and the NBA, everybody's like, oh, and Bradley Beal even said, oh, I might have got away with one. And the NBA doubled down and said, no, that's legal. And they said legal because he fumbled the ball, didn't have possession. He can come back down and make a pass. And as I saw a good friend of mine, Nate Bucati of 810 WHB in Kansas City, put on social media, he said, so hypothetically, you can juggle the ball down the entire floor without dribbling, and that's not a turnover because you didn't have control of it.
Yeah.
He's right when he says that. Technically, you could.
Technicality, he would be right. I mean, you could.
What a crock.
Yeah.
What a crock. The NBA rules, I mean, it's all about making a whole bunch of offense. And if Clover's listening, well, see, I told you, Wade, you don't like a whole bunch of offense either. I like offense. I don't like the 54-51.
You don't like fabricated offense.
Right. I don't need NFL, if I get an occasional 54-51 Rams-Chiefs game, that's fine. But I don't need it to be 48-45 every week. I don't need arena football every week. I want to see some defense. But I don't want 6-3. I don't want 13-3. I don't want 8 straight punts in the Super Bowl, okay? So I'm in the middle of this. When it comes to NBA, I don't want to see 80-78 like the Pistons back in the day against the Celtics. I don't want to see that. But I don't want to also see every single night 143-138. Now, occasionally, sure, I get it. Two great offensive teams. But I when I see James Harden, and John doesn't travel, except on airlines. So James Harden, he travels so much, and he pushes off. And I use him as an example because, by the way, it's not just Harden. Westbrook gets away with stuff. LeBron gets away with stuff.
Steph gets away with stuff.
KD gets away with stuff. I mean, a whole bunch of guys get away with stuff. But it's getting out of control. And when the NBA is trying to explain this isn't a travel and everybody in the world knows it is, you quit patronizing us, okay? It's a travel. So what's happening with these new rules or lack of enforcement of the real rules is that when you're allowed to take three or four steps or jump sideways after not dribbling and still shoot, it's harder to defend. Thus, offense goes
very
up.
Very much harder to defend.
Yes, it's harder to defend a guy that doesn't have to dribble and take four steps compared to two. It's a big difference, especially at the NBA level. So now we're seeing teams just scoring a whole bunch of points. And the Lakers are giving up a ton of points. More on them coming up in a moment. So all these points are happening. So then you're seeing some amazing things, like Russell Westbrook, averaged a triple-double 2 years ago, wins the MVP last year, does it again, and doesn't sniff the MVP. James Harden goes nuts last year offensively, wins the MVP. This year he's having an even better season, and he probably won't be the MVP. It's weird, but he probably won't be. James Harden has had 30 straight games where he scored 30 or more. 30 straight games he scored 30 points or more. Russell Westbrook has 10 consecutive games where he's posted a triple-double. That's an NBA record. Both of those are NBA records. But this isn't coming during the time of bad boy Piston basketball. It's coming at a time where there's flagrant fouls. I mean, the Piston guys, they could not play in today's day. Dumars, Vinnie Johnson, Isaiah Thomas, those guys would not make it in today's NBA. There's no way.
A lot of suspensions handed down.
Those guys wouldn't make it through a full game all year, okay, because of the hard fouls. They'd have to change their game. So the greatest player of all time, according to many, is Michael Jordan. Some people may say LeBron James or somebody else, but Michael Jordan, considered by probably more people than not, that he's the greatest basketball player of all time. Michael Jordan, who's the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, he was asked yesterday, and this is really good stuff. I hope you can hear it okay on the audio. I amplified it. Michael Jordan, who won 6 NBA titles and never lost an NBA title series, was asked yesterday, what's harder, 30 points in a row or 30 points, scoring 30 points or more in 30 straight games like James Harden, or Russell Westbrook having a triple-double in 10 consecutive games, both NBA records? Here's Michael Jordan's response. Listen closely. This is why he's considered the greatest of all time.
Both. They all both hard, you know. And uniquely, it shows the talent, you know, that we have within the league. It shows still progression within the league. I'm very proud of what both guys have done because they're making their mark for the league, and I think it really helps the growth of the league. Which is harder from a player standpoint. Six championships for all of me.
Yeah, six championships is a little bit harder than posting 10 straight triple-doubles in today's NBA or scoring 30 or more in 30 straight games. I thought that was a brilliant point. And here's the great thing about Jordan. He'll never lose an NBA championship series ever because he's done.
Yeah.
He's 6-0, and LeBron will never be able to match that. LeBron will never win that argument against Michael Jordan. Even if LeBron wins, he has three titles. If LeBron wins three more NBA titles, which I don't think is going to happen, but if LeBron would win three more NBA titles and get to six, it doesn't matter. If LeBron won eight, it would not matter. Here's why. He's lost one. He's lost more than one. But my point is, yeah. LeBron lost one. Even if LeBron was 6-1 in the NBA Finals, Jordan has this argument till he's dead.
Yeah, this argument.
This will go forever.
We're not talking about the argument for the GOAT, the greatest of all time. No. We're talking about this argument right here.
Yep, LeBron versus Michael.
Yeah. He never lost an NBA Finals.
And LeBron's 3-6, I think, NBA Finals.
Yeah, I believe so.
Which, in fairness, there's a few where he was the underdog. Jordan usually wasn't the underdog in the Bulls, but that's how great Jordan was, too. But he also had Scottie Pippen. LeBron, some of these years, hasn't had a great supporting cast. Of course, he did have at Miami. That's why he jumped over there. He did have Kyrie Irving to win a title his most recent
one. Have Kyrie. They don't win that series of seven over the
And, of course, Jordan doesn't have Pippen. He doesn't win any of them either, to be honest.
Everybody needs their compliment.
He needed Pippen to come into his own, as we know. So I thought that was a good line. Now, as to the Lakers and LeBron James, I'm not feeling good about these six-packs. The Lakers still can make the playoffs, but they're 28-29, and they're 3.5 games out of 2.5 or 3.5 games out of the last playoff spot. I think it's 2.5, and I think they're 3.5 out of the seventh spot, which to me they got to get to number 7 to have a chance, because you don't want to play the Warriors first round. The Warriors are number 1 seed. So the Lakers the other day gave up 143 to the Sixers, and last night they gave up 10 three-pointers in the first quarter to the lowly Atlanta Hawks. And Trae Young, by the way, played pretty well and scorched LeBron James a couple times off the dribble. Last night, the Lakers go to Atlanta. They lose 117-112. Tim Legler had a great breakdown on SportsCenter last night, showing the problems for the Lakers. Now here, when I made these wagers with people about six-packs and LeBron making the Western Conference Finals, which, by the way, I'm not giving up. It still could happen.
Yeah.
But here's what I did not count on. I didn't know that the Lakers would basically say, we're going to trade everybody for Anthony Davis, and then the trade doesn't go through, and now all these guys are all hurt because they're young and immature, and they're like, well, this you were going to trade me, and my feelings are hurt. And that includes Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and all this other stuff. So you just got a whole bunch of distractions. Had the Lakers acted like they weren't interested in Anthony Davis, and it was quiet, I still would like my chances, because I think the Lakers would have won some of these games recently. But when you watch the Lakers play, and Tim Legler broke it down last night perfectly, the Lakers aren't giving the maximum effort. The guys aren't bought in. There's a lack of chemistry because some of these guys feel disrespected because they were going to be traded away. They're like, you don't want me on this team. So now they're feeling hurt even though they're paid to play the game. And then you can see LeBron's just almost to the point fed up. One play in the game where Rondo ran, and that's a veteran, by the way, Rondo, they didn't run the right play, and LeBron was frustrated and then just walked back up the floor, and the Lakers got beat down the floor for a layup. And then another play, which was key, late in the game where two Lakers just stood out on the perimeter and didn't even try to go get a rebound. That was Kyle Kuzma and Brandon Ingram. Listen, when you see that, and it's that obvious to a guy like Tim Legler, and he shows it to America, that's calling out the Lakers, and it's calling out those players. And here's the thing. The All-Star break is here for the Lakers. There's still some games tonight, but the Lakers are 28-29. There's only 25 games left because the All-Star break, for some reason, NBA comes at the three-quarter mark. Usually, All-Star breaks are at halfway mark. So we played 57 games. There's only 25 to go. And here's LeBron talking about getting ready for the second half of the season. His Lakers, well, LeBron has made it to the playoffs every year in the NBA except for his rookie season, and right now the Lakers on the outside looking in.
You know, just a little sense of urgency every game, how important every game is. They've never played, some of the guys have never played a playoff game before, so you can't teach them that. But, you know, it's very important to understand how important every game is, no matter who you're playing and where you are.
That's true, but the younger guys aren't getting that, and they feel kind of disrespected that they were on the trading block. Now, to add to this list, Anthony Davis, there's a tie-in here. Anthony Davis, who many people just thought the Lakers are going to go get. They're going to give everything up, and they're going to go get Anthony Davis. Well, listen to this. Anthony Davis, who came out recently and said, I'm not going to re-sign in New Orleans, which, translation, I want to leave New Orleans, right?
Yes.
Okay. So last night, the Pelicans are playing the Magic. The Pelicans are at home in New Orleans. The Magics go into New Orleans, and they win 118-88. They win by 30 at New Orleans. After the game, Anthony Davis had the guts to say nobody was interested in playing. Well, does Davis fall in that category? The disgruntled star who requested a trade last month had one of the worst showings of his career last night. He didn't make his first field goal until there was 9:57 to go in the third quarter. His offensive rating for the game was the worst in any game he's ever played in the NBA when he's played at least 20 minutes. Perhaps he should look in the mirror. Here's the problem, and this is a problem, and coaches got to deal with all the egos. This is the reason why Bill Self probably shouldn't go to the NBA, or any guy from college to the NBA, although Brad Stevens done a nice job. You've got so many egos and so many guys that are thin-skinned at times, and you can see that college as well a little bit. But once you're mentioned as a guy being traded, you can sometimes shut it down. Even though your job is to play basketball and you're paid to do it, you're not going to refuse your paycheck, are you? Of course not.
No.
So you should be giving it your max effort. It is your job. And yeah, I know some days you don't feel great and you might not have your best effort, or maybe it's the best effort you can put out that day. Listen, Anthony Davis, shut up. I mean, you're the one that came out public and said you don't want to be there anymore. Now you're saying nobody's interested in playing? Apparently you weren't either.
Yeah.
And then you look at what's happened to the Lakers, where all those players seem to be sulking and there's no chemistry, and they're upset by the whole Anthony Davis trade rumors to the Lakers. And the Lakers are going to give up 2 first-round picks and trade 4 of their young players. You've seen a whole bunch of trade rumors, in essence, kill the motivation for 2 NBA teams right now. And if you're a fan that went to New Orleans game last night, you should demand your money back.
Oh, yeah.
You won't get it.
If you're a fan with season tickets, you should definitely demand some of your money back.
But if you're Anthony Davis, that takes some pretty big guts. I mean, I'm okay with him saying nobody's interested in playing, but he should say, including myself.
Yeah, put that little caveat there at the end. Say, yeah, me too. I was one of nine and had 3 points.
It'd be one thing if Anthony Davis went out and had 32 points and 15 rebounds like he usually does. No. He went 2 quarters without a point.
Yeah.
That's an all-star? No. He is an all-star. He's a great player. He obviously checked out. So that's it's calling the kettle black, isn't it?
Yeah, the NBA, man. Sometimes you just wonder what's going on, you know, with some of it, because there are games and there's teams like that, mm-hmm. that you think should be really good, and then things start going bad, and they give up real quick.
Yes,
it's an 82-game season. You got to understand that. You have 2 bad games. Okay, let's get it going again. Let's reverse this and get it going back the right way.
Right.
And, you know, that's something with the team that I follow, that I feel like my team and the Spurs, just they were on a 4-game losing streak, and it's like, oh, my goodness, can we get it turned back around? And that's been a roller coaster all season.
Mm-hmm.
But they somehow figure it out and get it flipped back the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's historically for the Spurs and for these good teams, you know, the Cavs.
And LeBron usually does with every team with he's with.
Teams,
they somehow overcome things.
You know, they'll start out with some chemistry
they still
issues
could do.
Early in the season, and then they'll flip things around.
Right.
And I mean, the Warriors are a team that can do that because of the talent that they have. That has nothing to do with the the grittiness of the organization. I mean, when you've got that talent, I mean, it's not that hard to flip a switch. But so some of these teams, like the Timberwolves, are one of the perfect examples for me of a team that's underachieved so much over the last 3 or 4 years. You think that they're going to be on the verge of being big. And then,
by the way, one of the big reasons why is Andrew Wiggins.
Yeah.
He's not an alpha dog.
Exactly.
Never has been.
And you expected him to be more in the NBA than what he actually has turned out to be.
Doris Burke called him out NBA game a few weeks ago. She just called him out.
Yeah.
I loved it. I think Doris Burke's one of the best in the business.
Oh, yeah.
Forget she's a woman, which some people get caught up in that. I don't care if she's a woman or a man or a horse or a cat.
An alien.
I don't care. If you can break down a game, she's terrific. And she flat out, and she's not afraid to say things like that. And she called out Andrew Wiggins. Like, he was on fire in the first half, and now he's standing in the corner not even moving on offense, not even trying to get the ball, and it's crunch time.
Yeah.
She called him out. She's like, if he's going to take the next step and this team's going to take the next step, he's got to be the alpha dog. But he's never been the alpha dog. That's not it. It's kind of like Dean Wade. Dean Wade is not the alpha dog. He's never going to be an alpha dog. That's just not his personality. Andrew Wiggins is getting a max contract. He's never going to be the alpha dog. He's not going to learn that now. He either has it in him or he doesn't.
Yeah.
And he doesn't. But he's making a whole bunch of money, and he seems to be fat and happy on that. And he still goes out and gets his 20 points a game. But he checks out when it's most important. We saw that at KU, not diving for a loose ball in a key moment of some games, worried about getting hurt. And he does the same thing in the NBA, even though he's a tremendous talent. And so you see that a lot in the NBA, and I think that's why some people get soured on the NBA.
Yeah.
And I get it. And when you see LeBron even, like, just kind of disgusted, his body language being called out by Tim Legler, and you don't hustle to go down the floor, and that's supposed to be a leader of your team, and you got a whole bunch of young guys on your team that you're supposed to be a mentor to. Listen, if LeBron needs a break, go out. Go out. Ask the coach to go out. You need a break on offense, put him in the corner, which they've done sometimes, and then run a set without him, and then he can rest a little bit on offense. That happened all the time with the Cavs. But don't, when there's all of a sudden a rebound goes up and you're mad because you didn't get the ball because they didn't run the right play, and you don't hustle down the floor and the Hawks, a young team, get down and they beat you on a 5-on-4, that's on you, not your teammates.
Yeah.
And that's why I still think Jordan's the greatest of all time, because Jordan, I never saw do that. I never saw Michael Jordan just – I've seen him argue a call before, but I didn't see him just get upset with somebody. And people could say, well, that's easy for you to say. Jordan never had a team that was 28-29 like Lakers. I could say, yeah, true, and that helps my argument that Jordan's the greatest because he never was a part of that bad of a team.
He didn't have
really
a team like that late in his career.
No.
But he did have teams like that.
He did, early in his career.
You never doubted – I don't think when I was watching the Bulls anyway, I never doubted the effort of Michael Jordan.
No.
And, we could go on for days about this, right, about, you know, not taking offense off when he was still guarding the best offensive player on the other team on defense.
Yes.
And so, you know, Pippen, when he came in, changed a little bit. That took a little pressure off.
Sure did. Especially ball handling.
Yeah. And so, but, you know, whether you're getting into that or not, it is the NBA right now. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are considered stars that'll take time off. James Harden takes defense off a lot. He doesn't take it seriously on that end of the floor. And you know, there's not a lot of guys that are going to be – I think Kawhi Leonard's probably one of the best at being focused both ways as far as stars go in the league.
Paul George is really good. I think Paul George is the MVP of the league, in my opinion. I've watched him now. He is a complete player. He's having an unbelievable year. And he's averaging 35 over his last 10 games.
Yeah.
And everybody's talking about Harden because he gets his points.
Yeah.
Harden doesn't play defense like George does.
Yeah.
George and the Thunder were down 22, came back and beat the Rockets the other day because they played defense.
Yeah.
And guess who didn't? So, you know, everybody talks about the Greek the Freak and Milwaukee as MVP candidate. And they talk about Harden.
Giannis and George, I would put ahead of
James I would
Harden.
I had a Harden round. Yeah. I agree with you. But the fact he won it last year, I think, will hurt him, just like Westbrook won it a couple years ago. But here's the thing. If Jordan played in today's NBA rules, he would score. He could easily score 30-plus in 30 straight games.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he could have done it back then if he really wanted to. But there are times where he knew he needed to defer as he learned as he got older.
Uh-huh.
I got to keep my teammates involved. And I've said this till the cows come home and people didn't see Jordan play. When Jordan scored 50 or more, the Bulls' record, their percentage, was not as good as when he scored 30 to 35.
Yeah.
It's just because he got guys involved. When Jordan would go games where he didn't even try to shoot. He would. He'd get first quarter. He'd just be like, I'm going to get everybody involved. The next night, they don't have it. I'm taking over. And he'd score 50 and maybe win. But they were always better winning percentage-wise when he scored 25 to, say, 35 than they were when he scored 50 or more.
Yeah. So the 93 finals are about the only exception to that against the Suns where he took over offensively. I think he averaged like 37 a game.
That's NBA finals.
Yeah. But I'm saying is even in the finals, it was like if he was scoring, he had his 40-point games every now and then, but when they were balanced, even in the finals, they were better.
I agree. And I think you can see that with a lot of teams that we talk about. Last night, UK State, five guys in double figures. Nobody went off for 35. And they won.
Yeah.
You know, and I see the Thunder with some balance in regards to they have George and Westbrook, two guys that can score instead of just one guy. You saw the Beloit boys last night. They won by 22 against a state-ranked team in Salina, won a league title, and their top score 11 points.
Yeah.
Because they're not afraid to share the ball. They have five, six guys that make threes almost every game. You don't have one guy you can key on.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what makes your best teams.
For sure.
Okay. The Chiefs have been making some changes on their coaching staff. That they got the defensive line coach from New England, the Patriots, which was a surprise, which I say, yay. We need some help coaching defensive line a little bit. The Chiefs are supposedly going to get David Merritt, who coached defensive backs for the Arizona Cardinals. He's going to be a new DBs coach. He worked with Steve Spagnuolo, the new defensive coordinator, back when they worked together. Matt House, who was part of Spagnuolo's St. Louis Rams 2011, the Chiefs paying for his little mini buyout, $150,000 with the University of Kentucky. He was the Kentucky's defensive coordinator. They were the sixth best defense in the country in college football last year. He is now going to be the Chiefs linebackers coach. That was announced yesterday. And also announced yesterday is that Emmett Thomas, great Chiefs player and, of course, a tremendous, well-respected man. He's coached for 38 seasons. He is retiring. And he was, of course, part of that Chiefs team that won the NFL championship or the Super Bowl. And just a tremendous player. And he's also a, isn't he a Hall of Famer? Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. Yep. Hall of Famer, defensive backs coach, 38 years as a coach, 22 total years with the Chiefs, 9 as a coach, 13 as a player. He is retiring. So, and we mentioned Merritt, the new DB's coach. So the Chiefs are doing an overhaul on their defensive coaching staff. Their linebackers coach went to Chicago. That's a guy they really liked, DeLone. But now Matt House comes in from Kentucky to be linebackers coach. I like it. New voices.
Change it up.
Yep. New guys.
Yeah, change it up. Change it up. Let's do it.
Guys that fit with Spagnuolo so they can put together what he wants to run, the 4-3 or a mixture. I'm all for it. And I love the moves they're making. Well, is it going to work? I don't know.
Yeah. That remains to be seen.
But it's better to do something different because what you're doing consistent last 3 years obviously wasn't working, and it probably cost you a Super Bowl appearance. And by the way, speaking of that guy, Bob Sutton, go ahead and just do not bet on the Falcons to win anything this year. Bob Sutton has been hired as a senior assistant.
Senior assistant is what it said.
Yeah, like Dan Quinn, the head coach, is going to be the defensive coordinator, which is weird. You don't see the head coach be the DC very often. You see the OC sometimes, like Reed is in essence the OC, let's be honest. But that is interesting. So Bob Sutton's our senior assistant for defense. So you didn't want to pay him the defensive coordinator position because you knew he's flamed out so badly in Kansas City, so this is a way to cover it? Okay, whatever you want to say. Listen, I want the Chiefs offense to go against that defense next year. I really do, if Bob Sutton has any say over it. And by the way, there's still more stuff coming out after that Chiefs-Patriots game. More stuff coming from the Patriots players. There's now, like we saw with Belichick, calling out how they knew what the Chiefs were going to run defensively. There's more and more stuff coming out from New England about how the Patriots knew exactly what the Chiefs were going to be in. And that, my friends, makes me sick to my stomach because we could have let him go last year. There were certain people, raise your hand, Dusty and me certainly are, that everybody knew you should have unloaded Bob Sutton last year. You changed and went to a different quarterback. You should have went to a different defensive coordinator. And by the way, the guy you hired this year to be your new DC was available last year.
Yeah.
You can't say, well, we were going to go for that guy, but he was under contract, so we waited to get the guy we wanted. No, he was unemployed and available. And that still irks me. The Chiefs didn't make that move a year ago because I hope that wasn't the window this past year.
Yeah.
And then you can also argue, if we had Kareem Hunt, we would have been in the Super Bowl. I don't know if you would have been or not, but it would have been a little bit different in crunch time. You'd be able to run the ball, maybe keep your defense on the side so it could have a little bit more rest. Maybe that would have helped you in the first half against the Patriots. Ifs, ands, and buts, okay? Everybody has injuries. Guys get kicked off teams. Guys have problems off the field. Coaches aren't the greatest in some situations. You get outfoxed. That's why it's a game, and that's why they play. And sports is great, especially when you see things like last night. Kansas State, without Cartier Jada, going to Texas and grinding out a win. Duke, down 23, not giving up, coming all the way back and beating Louisville. I mean, that's what makes sports great, when teams go out and earn it. And last night, K-State, Duke, they earned it.
From the Market Center, your latest market report, Lori Williams.
Hi, everyone. Your markets this hour has the March corn down 3/4 at 377 and a half, May down a half at 385 and 3/4, soybeans for March up 1 at 918 and a half, May up 3/4 at 932 and a half. The Kansas City wheat for March down 3/4 at 491 and a quarter, May down a half at 496 and a half. Chicago March unchanged at 520, the May down a quarter at 521 and a half. Minus signs at the Merck, the live cattle for February down 57 at 120. 126.25. April down 45 at 127.42. Feeders for March down 42 at 143.97. April down 32 at 146.32. The Feb lean hogs down a dime at 55.07. April down 27 at 60.05. And the Dow this hour is up 140 points at 25,546. I'm Lori Williams on the Kansas Farm and Ranch Radio Network.
And one more tidbit about the sports ticket. We were talking about Kyler Murray being number one pick overall, maybe. Cliff Kingsbury, the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, who was at Texas Tech, who said, if I was a head coach in the NFL, I'd take Kyler Murray as the first overall pick, has backpedaled now. Says Josh Rosen is their guy. Stay tuned. The draft coming up in April for the National Football League.